Hello. Before we jump into the show, we need to shout out our awesome new sponsor, Marquee TV.
Man, I was so excited when we got the news about the sponsor. You all might remember from a few weeks ago that I talked about my new Shakespeare project where I'm learning everything I can about Macbeth.
It felt like we said the name Shakespeare out loud and the Marquee people appeared and said, "We gotcha."
It really did.
Yeah.
In case you're not familiar, Marquee TV is a streaming service. They have theater, ballet, opera, documentaries. There's a bunch of behind-the-scenes content of productions. Basically, it's a fun way to nerd out about the arts.
Yeah, it's a streaming service that will take you to the best theaters in the world from the comfort of your own sofa.
I've already added so many things to our watch list. Did you know there's a ballet based on the works of Beatrix Potter?
I did. They've got a little preview video of somebody dancing around in a rabbit costume.
Peter Rabbit doing ballet. I also added a few hip-hop dance shows just to balance out the dancing bunnies.
Yeah, hip-hopera. That's what they call it.
They do. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Mozart's Requiem from the London Philharmonic Orchestra and a bunch of Shakespeare plays, including Richard II, starring my pretend best friend, David Tennant.
And Judi Dench talking about her long relationship with Shakespeare in a master class.
Yeah, I love Judi Dench.
Sure.
But David Tennant.
Yeah, that's quite a battle there.
Okay, there's a special deal for our listeners. Marquee TV is offering 3 months of their service for 99 cents. You get 3 months of all of this good stuff for 99 cents with the code SSOP.
That cost seems absurdly low to me. Like, first, I expected it to be much higher given the quality of the content, but also 99 cents. You can't park next to a theater for 99 cents.
Accurate. Also, if you watch Marquee TV, you get to see these shows maybe wearing your pajamas and hanging out with your cat or your dog.
Yeah. It's a good way to sort of indulge your own curiosity. You can see all the performances of Hamlet, or maybe the first 15 minutes of all of the performances of Hamlet, and you don't have to rope your friends and family into all of that.
Or you could watch Richard II over and over and over and over.
What's the best angle for David Tennant in Richard II?
Trick question. All of them. Anyway, you definitely need to explore the website because there is a ton of really fun, fascinating, engaging stuff on there. I went in specifically looking for Shakespeare, and I found a ton of other things I wanted to watch.
Yeah. You can keep up with what they're doing on social media at Marquee Arts TV. You can visit their website at marquee.tv. That's marquee.tv to get 3 months of their service for just 99 cents with the promo code SSOP. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. And now the show.
Coming up, a new fairy tale novel from one of my favorite authors.
A retelling of an American classic.
Plus our distraction of the week. I'm Mel.
I'm Dave. This is the Library of Lost Time.
One of the first books I read specifically for Strong Sense of Place was The Tiger's Wife by Taya Obrecht. It's set in an unnamed Balkan country. It's probably Serbia. The heroine Natalia is a young doctor, and just as she's beginning to deal with the horrors of the 1990s civil wars, her much adored grandfather dies. In celebration of his life and to kind of work her way through her grief, she retells the stories that her grandfather told her. It has elements of folklore and fairy tales, and it's really sad and beautiful. It's the kind of book I just want to like clutch to my chest.
Yeah, I remember you loving that book.
I mean, it has a magical tiger and a bear man.
Yeah.
And a deathless man.
A deathless man.
Yes.
Oh.
I love it so much I could go read it again right now. Warning, Goodreads is less impressed. So ignore Goodreads if you think you're interested in this book.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Which is all a long way to get to. Taya Obrecht has a new book out this week. It's called The Morning Side.
Is that morning like early in the day or morning like we're going to a funeral morning?
It's morning like the beginning of the day, and The Morning Side is the name of a building.
Oh, all right.
Which leads me to, it has elements that I find irresistible in a novel.
Okay.
First, it's narrated in the first person by a somewhat precocious girl. And most of the action takes place in a once glamorous, now sort of rundown apartment building called the Morningside, which is located on an island city that once might have been New York.
Oh.
I mean.
So there's a little sci-fi here.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a combination of sci-fi, magical realism, and fairy tale.
Oh, that sounds great.
I know.
Yeah.
I've only read the prologue and a little bit of the first chapter, and I'm like frantically looking at my calendar to see if I can just chuck everything I'm supposed to be doing and read this book.
Yeah.
In an interview, Taya Obrecht said that she was inspired by two things to write this story. First, her grandparents grew up in Yugoslavia, where until the 1990s and the civil wars, different ethnicities and religions lived side by side with no problem. Her grandfather was Roman Catholic. Her grandmother was Muslim. They were married for ages. It was not a big deal to anybody until the wars happened. And then their country fell apart.
Yeah.
And they lost any security of having a home. They didn't really belong anywhere anymore. Fast forward to the COVID lockdowns. Taya was living in New York City and, like the rest of us, just looking out her window all day watching the world go by.
Yeah.
And a luxury tower was being built right outside her window. And she said she thought, building a building, what an act of faith in your institutions and the fact that the things that bring order and financial stability will continue as they are.
Yeah.
And those two ideas collided, her grandparents' displacement and this new building, which is like a beacon of optimism. And she wondered what it would be like if people lived in a fancy tower like that, but 80 years from now, when the shine is kind of off of it. The New York Times said the Morningside has elegant, effortless world building and immensely satisfying twists. The website LitHub published an excerpt that I'll link to in show notes so you can give it a go. That's The Morningside by Taya Obrecht.
I read Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn for the first time as an adult.
I remember that with that cool book club you were in.
Yeah. Required Reading Revisited.
Yeah.
That was really great. I am not the first person to say that Huck Finn is a good book. There are parts of this story where I felt like I was floating down the Mississippi on a raft, like I had an out-of-body experience.
That's cool.
I could hear the water. And the story of Huck, a racist kid with an abusive father, and his friendship with Jim, an escaped slave, is moving and compelling and sweet and a little heartbreaking. A new book retells part of that story from the slave's point of view. That book is called James, and it's by Percival Everett. You might know Everett from the book The Trees, which was shortlisted for Booker a couple of years ago. But James is his 24th novel.
Wow.
Yeah. One of his books was the basis for the movie American Fiction, which won the Oscar this year.
All right.
Yeah. For a good chunk of the story, James runs parallel to Twain's book, and we see the action from his perspective.
Like, to the extent that you can kind of side by side them?
Yes.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And James is an intelligent man. One of the book's conceits is that Jim speaks English perfectly well, but produces the language he says in Huck Finn to make white people comfortable.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, that made my stomach flip over a little.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's apparently developed on during the course of the book, that idea. Like its parallel book, James is a thrilling adventure. Huck and Finn are on the run down the Mississippi. They face floods and storms and violence and scam artists and unexpected treasures. There's humor and excitement at every turn. Kirkus praised it, saying, quote, one of the noblest characters in American literature gets a novel worthy of him.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah. And Ann Pratchett said, I found myself cheering both the writer and his hero. It's just out this week. It's James by Percival Everett. And now our distraction of the week.
We took a trip to London last week.
We did. And now we're a couple who can't get over talking about it.
Seriously. In between seeing art and bookshops and live theater, we ate a lot of pretty fantastic food.
We did.
We had an afternoon tea at a place called Tea and Tattle.
Yep.
With five kinds of finger sandwiches, scones with raspberry jam and strawberry jam. They didn't make us choose. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And four kinds of cake.
I feel like English tea is one of those things that I will always be up for, you know?
Yes, 100%.
Somebody could walk into a room at a random time and be like, how about a fancy English tea? And I'm like, yes, let's do it. Yeah, got to put on my tails.
The thing that I liked about Tea and Tattle was that it was like cozy and casual. Yeah, it was really fun.
It was. It was the food without the sort of pretense of setting.
Yeah.
But the pretense of setting is also very nice if you're looking for that.
We also had a big English fry up breakfast.
Yep.
And a workaday lunch with massive piles of chips in this really cute, rowdy, greasy spoon cafe by the Tate Museum.
I'd love that place. It felt so British.
And very neighborhoody.
Yeah, despite the fact that it's like a block and a half from the palace.
Yeah. But I think my favorite was our dinner at the Sri Lankan restaurant, Rambutan.
Yeah.
If you listened to our Strong Sense of Place episode about Sri Lanka, you heard me talk about the Rambutan cookbook by Cynthia Shanmugalingam. I read it front to back like a novel, and I learned so much about Sri Lankan culture and history along the way. But it's also just joyous, this cookbook. All the photos are saturated and it's filled with candy colors. And the stories made me wish I had a Sri Lankan grandma to teach me how to make curry and sambal. The book is really fun.
Are the recipes doable?
Yes, and we're going to get to that.
Okay.
The book was published in 2022. And last March, the author opened her restaurant in London, right across the street from Borough Market. The Borough Market is also amazing.
Yeah, it is.
It's an enormous food and produce market that's been there since the 12th century.
Yeah.
And we just breezed through it on our way to Rambutan.
It sort of feels like it's buried under the bridge there and has, I'm not making it sound very good, but it's got a lot of
let's go hang out under the bridge.
Yeah. It's got a lot of sort of brick and ironwork, and it feels both contemporary and like it's been there since the 13th century or whatever.
When you walk through the market, you see the front of the restaurant through the wrought iron arches of the market. And there's this golden yellow sign above the door that says Rambutan. And then you walk in and it's filled with big leafy plants. And the walls are kind of honey colored and they have light wood tables. But the main room is mostly taken up with a curving bar that goes around the open kitchen. And that's where we sat. So we were conversing with the people making our food throughout our meal.
They've converted the bar into sort of a working food area. So you can see people working on the food you're about to eat, which we both enjoy.
And they were very chill for people who are firing up curries and making bread to order and slinging bowls out to the wait staff.
Yeah.
They had a very calm vibe, which I appreciated. The menu changes daily. So if you go to their website, you can see a sample menu, but they change it very regularly. There are always hot and cold apps, and the apps are inspired by street food. So the night we were there, we had fried chicken wings with pickled red peppers on the top that were so good.
Yeah, somehow hot and sweet at the same time.
But not too hot.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
And we also had a dish called acharu, which is fruit that's lightly pickled with chilies, sugar, and vinegar. And in the cookbook, it's made with apples, but we had it with blood oranges. And it's just like flavor explosion in your mouth.
Yeah, it was the first thing that hit the table, and it was very exciting.
It was like cold and sweet and spicy and juicy. And we actually had to ask them how we were supposed to eat it because they'd given us small plates and forks and knives. And in Czech Republic, no one eats things with their hands. Sandwiches, hamburgers, French fries, pizza, everything's eaten with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
So we were both kind of wondering, like, are we going to look like dolts if we just pick up these oranges and shove them in our face?
Yeah.
And the answer was no.
That's fully the intent. Grab an orange and pop it in your maw.
Yeah. And it was great.
That's great.
The menu also has a bunch of grilled meats and fish and curries and a few sambals. Sambals are a cross between a salad and a condiment. And then everything comes with this buttery rice and roti. And I feel like we need to talk about the roti.
We do. The roti definitely deserves its own space.
It could have its own show. If you've never had the pleasure, roti is an unleavened flatbread that's common in India and Sri Lanka. It's round and soft and has visible char marks from the grill. But the rambutan version is pretty special. Do you want to share your thoughts about eating it?
So what you just said made me think of like a, you know, like a flat charred grilled bread. Mm-hmm. And this is more of kind of leaning into a croissant. Like this is many, many layers of crispy, crunchy goodness that is intended, I think, to be that way so it sops up the sauces and juices mm-hmm. on your plate that are left over when you're eating whatever you're eating. Mm-hmm. And oh my goodness, it was just so good though.
It's like shocking.
Yeah.
I remember reading a review of the restaurant and the reviewer said I could have eaten three of those things. And I was like, three? Really?
Amateur.
I felt very vindicated about that croissant comment when I got home because I looked it up in the cookbook to make sure we had the recipe. And the head note says, these flaky, crispy parathas are kind of like the all-butter croissant of roti. And I was like, correct. So we sat directly in front of the very lovely chef who was making them. And he had a seemingly endless stash of these little balls of dough that were curled up like a snail shell and glimmering with butter. Mm-hmm. And then he would take one out and sort of gently pat it into a flat circle and put it on the grill and grill it until it puffed up a little bit and got brown marks on it.
Yeah.
And then, and I think this is a key step because it's also in the cookbook, he would put it flat on the table and kind of smash it and smush it with his hands a little bit.
Yeah.
Which
pretty forcefully.
Yeah. Which I think is the thing that breaks up the layers on the inside and gives it that flakiness.
Yeah.
It was a life-changing bread experience.
Yeah.
We also had a roasted pumpkin curry. Wow.
That's all you got for roasted pumpkin
curry.
Moving
on. It might be the best curry I've ever had. It's made with coconut milk. So it leans toward Thai, but it didn't really taste like a Thai curry or an Indian curry. It was definitely its own thing. And the pumpkin was cut into pretty thick slabs and roasted. It was very, very tender, but also dense. So it was kind of like meat made out of candy.
Although it was a vegetarian dish, wasn't it?
100%, but it had the texture of meat for me.
Yeah.
That kind of soft, dense, like a slow-cooked, braised.
Delicious, multi-layered flavor profile and a really nice texture and just
creamy.
So good.
We also had a pork belly curry that is, it's called black dry curry, so there's not a lot of sauce. And the curry spices are blackened, so it has very rich, layered flavor. They serve everything family style, so you just plop it onto your plate and the sauces and the sambal sprinkled on top and you sop it up with the bread and it just couldn't have been better.
Well, and you mix some things around, right? And you have a little bit of the pork with a little bit of the pumpkin or some add some rice or the whole thing on top of one of the roti. And I think now we're happy for the rest of our lives.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Why am I telling you all of this? Well, number one, if you go to London, I definitely think you should try rambutan.
Yep.
But number two, I revisited the cookbook when I got home, and I was delighted to find that all of the things we ate in the restaurant are in the cookbook. So everything we mentioned today, you could try. And the recipes are not complicated to make. Curries are not inherently a difficult dish. The trickiest part is getting the right ingredients. The author said, if you can't find curry leaves, it's very difficult to make Sri Lankan food because they're in everything and they have a very distinctive flavor. And I was like, well, I'm out of luck then. And then I went to our regular grocery store where we get our groceries delivered and they have curry leaves. So if we can find them here in Prague, I'm sure you can find them where you live. They are available on Amazon if you don't have an Asian market or a Whole Foods type store near you. And I think they're fairly easy to grow in an herb garden if you wanted to tackle that kind of thing. I will put links to some recipes in the show notes, but really, get your hands on this cookbook. I loved it when I read it the first time. I love it even more now. The book and restaurant are Rambutan by Cynthia Shanmugam. Visit strongsenseofplace.com/library for more on the books we talked about today and the fantastic food from Rambutan.
Thanks for joining us in the Library of Lost Time. Remember to visit your local library and your independent bookstore to lose some time yourself.
Stay curious. We'll talk to you soon.